This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.
It's an unfair game.
They're schemers. Schemers trying to control their little worlds.
Please, speak as you might to a young child or a golden retriever.
Rich get richer, that's the law of the land.
I owe you nothing!
It's just money.
This is madness! Everybody just yells and screams at each other. Nobody's civil anymore!
That's not the kind of humor we do on this show.
Put that coffee down.
I drink your milkshake.
Now you're looking for the secret.
There can be only one.
Everything becomes chaos.
Can you dig it?
Everyone, welcome back to another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness. I'm John Kutzmita, joined as always with Brent Johnson. Brent, how's your week going, my friend?
Can't complain. Things are rolling along. Got a nice sunny day outside. You know, markets are pumping higher. What can go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? You know, it's we kind of started the show as an idea around the conversations we are already having, but just so everybody knows, this one's going to be a little. I mean, they're all somewhat unscripted, but this one more than others because we honestly haven't talked all week outside of sending each other memes and shark videos. So this will be a very candid conversation. Let's start off with some madness. What do you say? So, you know, I'd like to, you know, get the sports stuff out of the way. Not everyone's a huge fan when we talk about it, but you know, I'm a born and raised Philly boy. So go Birds. I'm super stoked to see that they're kicking butt. And more than that, you know, more important to Philadelphia football fans than the Eagles doing well is the Cowboys losing. So to all the Cowboy fans,
that goes for San Francisco too. You know, I don't know that San Francisco is my hometown, but I lived there probably longer than I did anywhere else other than the little town I grew up in. So we've kind of got my hometown versus your hometown, and you know, 49ers love seeing the Cowboys lose too. So almost as much as we love seeing the Eagles lose.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens this weekend, but at least we got both, you know, both have something to high five about. I don't quite understand how they're still considered America's team, and they just stink.
Amazing, right?
The room, yeah. So,
I mean, just in general, though, before we move on, just in general, is there a more crazy and just madness town than Philadelphia when it comes to sports?
Well, we have pelted Santa Claus with snowballs. So we do have that reputational piece going. I mean, I think from, you know, there's obviously a bit of a bias growing up there, but it is a very passionate sports city, and especially when it comes to the football. I think, you know, even players will admit going in there is a very uncomfortable experience. So,
yeah.
But you know, the 49ers aren't in our division, you know, so it's NFC East that things get really heated, the Giants, Cowboys, stuff like that. But
sure,
this will be a good game. It'll be fun to watch, and it's cool. Good to see we're getting down to the wire. I'm ready to see who takes it all.
There we go.
So some other interesting madness in the world of politics. The senator out of Missouri, Josh Hawley, introduced the Pelosi bill. The preventing elected leaders from owning securities and investments. And if you're not familiar, because you live in a bubble, Pelosi is basically one of the greatest traders ever to exist. And of course, none of that is insider trading. But
not at all.
So obviously, that's why they're introducing this bill. Did you have some thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think it's fantastic. It's hilarious. First of all, the name itself is just great, right? And, you know, interestingly enough, having lived in San Francisco, I have met her husband on a few occasions, just briefly, you know, at cocktail parties or events or whatever. And he's always talking investments. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, he's supposed to be this legendary investor. And, you know, I'm sure his best analyst is Nancy. So
yeah,
we'll see what goes on with this. It'll be really interesting to see whether this passes or not. You know, I think 5 years ago, I would have said it doesn't have a snowball's chance in hell of passing, but it might actually pass now just because of, you know, it's kind of in the zeitgeist of the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's like anything else. They're not going to pass something that jeopardizes their opportunities, you know, speaking right. of Congress. But at this point, it's just so blatant and so ridiculous when you have things like the Pelosi portfolio tracker on Twitter. And of course, that gets banned, even though it was like, you know, one of the most popular feeds for a while. So I think it's great that, you know, in itself, it's an inside joke and a meme, if you will. You know, the fact that sure. she's kind of getting called out with this acronym, it's pretty funny. I think politics is already kind of a joke. You might as well just keep running with the joke. So I'm kind of glad somebody's doing it. Well, look, let's get into markets because although it feels like it's sideways, there's a lot of, you know, early volatility starting to creep up. You know, one of the things on my list that I wanted to pick your brain about is the topic of oil, because when you look at charts and history of when you have these oil shocks or spikes in price, there tends to coincide with recession. And I understand the supply argument and the narrative around why oil, you know, is now poised to rebound and keep going up, particularly with China reopening. But it does feel like maybe that historic trend of price shock causing recession hasn't really played out yet, and crashing demand could be more of a force on oil. Do you have any thoughts on where oil could be headed?
Well, I tend to think it's going to go lower. I think that, you know, I think the whole China story reopening, I get it. And if they can reopen successfully and if, you know, global trade picks up, then of course, you know, demand for that energy will rise. But I just think that we are still in for some trouble. And I think that global demand will fall. Whether it falls right away or not, I don't know. But I would expect at some point either, you know, in the first half of the year, second half of the year, I expect to see oil lower. I think it could go into the 60s. I don't necessarily think we're going back into the 30s or 40s. Although if we get into some kind of a 2020 type scenario, you know, we had to go all the way to negative. But here's what I think is very interesting about oil. And I don't know if people really think about this or not, but you're talking about the supply or the price shock. Basically, if, you know, if oil goes too high, it can cause a recession because input costs to run your businesses or whatever it is just becomes very high, and that has effects on profits. There's another side of it too, and that is too low of oil prices can be very inhibitive on global growth. And the reason is because energy is such a big part of the overall economy. If energy prices are low, then the companies that are involved in energy and the countries that have massive energy reserves, as those prices are low, think of that energy or those reserves as collateral off which they can, you know, create credit or get loans or extend, you know, credit lines or whatever it is. As oil gets low and as demand falls, not only are lenders less likely to loan in a falling demand environment, but there's less collateral off of which to loan. And so for the global economy to really hum along, you kind of need oil to kind of be in a sweet spot, you know, kind of, I don't know, $50 to $80, right? Is probably that sweet spot. You know, you get a little bit outside either way, you're probably still okay, but you get above 100, you know, that starts to cause problems. But if you get below 40 or you get below 30, that actually starts to cause problems as well. So I don't consider myself an oil expert, but I do kind of, my gut is telling me we're going to see some lower oil prices at some point this year. But that said, longer term, you know, you and I both know Cuppy, and Cuppy has a very strong thesis of why oil is going to go much higher. I don't disagree with his longer term thesis in the medium to long term.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he carries that on to other energy related commodities like uranium. And you've even had, you know, kind of a dabble with other energy commodities. You've taken a position on natural gas. Now, is that purely what the chart's telling you, or do you see something
the charts are actually telling me it's going lower. The charts looks horrible. we bought a little bit today at around 275. And part of the reason I bought it is because sentiment is just completely wiped out. There's a number of different sentiment trackers I follow. And it's not completely wiped out, but it's getting very close. And, can it go lower? It can absolutely go lower. But I do think that over time, there's going to be demand for natural gas. And whether it's, whether we get a cold spring or we need the nat gas to run air conditioners in the summer, at some point, I don't think we're going to go to $2 and stay there forever. Now, it would not shock me at all if we get a bounce here from, 275 to 325, 350. And then in a month or two, we have another crash down to $2. And I'll buy more at $2. Because I think at that point, that's just a really low level. And at some point, I think the fundamentals catch up with it. And I don't mind, hanging out there for a while to see if we get lucky. Because, on the flip side is if the military actions around the world heat up and we get a cold spring and then, we get in the next year and, supplies start to dwindle, we could be back at nat gas $7 or $8, fairly easily under that scenario.
So we've talked about this a couple times. This is the recession everyone is begging for. At least, everyone thinks it's right around the corner. So you look at some of the points that were just made about oil, some of your thoughts there on natural gas. We have this geopolitical thing that just doesn't seem to want to go away. We escalate it. We de-escalate it. Not that it should be ignored, but this thing could just roll. Like, look what we had, very different participants in the Iraq war, but look what went on there. Ukraine could be a decade long campaign, right? So do we end up, what's the possibility that oil hits that Goldilocks, right? Hangs in 50 to 80, nat gas doesn't do anything crazy, and we just kind of coast along and countries as well as businesses are able to fund themselves, but consumers aren't getting squashed.
Well, I think that could last for a year, year and a half, but I don't think it can go for 5 years. And that's why I feel like I could make a really strong case for the next 6 months for everything to be very good. Markets to trend higher, liquidity to stay good, oil to stay in that sweet spot range, nat gas to be okay. And we have a good spring, but I can make the other argument as well. And that's kind of the other argument is my base argument. I just think that we've gotten far enough into this debt super cycle that at some point this debt is going to start to have consequences. And I kind of think that we're at that point. So while I can make a scenario where, things are fine for another 6 to 8 months, I have a really hard time making an argument for another 6 or 8 years without a crisis developing. And so, I wish I had the crystal ball to tell me the exact timing. But to your question, could we have 2 or 3 years? I don't even think we could have 2 or 3 years. But we could have, 6 months to a year. I could get to that place.
Good perspective there. So we do have 450 basis points of rate hiking cycles and rate hikes in a very short cycle. Rate hikes in general always lead to some kind of pain. So it does feel a bit naive, if anything else, to think that we've already felt the brunt of this Fed policy shift. So yeah, something's, this is just starting to work its way through the system in a lot of cases because it just happened. We're still blinking our eyes and waking up from it.
And so I think, a lot of people, they'll ask me kind of how I'm positioned. And the reality is I don't change my positioning that much and that often. I am almost always net long. I'm very rarely net short. I'm not going to say I'm never net short, but occasionally it happens. If I look at history tells me over long periods of time, asset prices trend higher, right? And so you want to be long assets because fiat currency gets debased. But history also tells me that you can, there's periods of time. What's that Lenin quote where, there's weeks where decades happen? And I feel like we're in this type of environment where you can have a couple decades happen in a couple weeks. And so in my opinion, in this type of an environment, while I'm still long assets, I am always looking for that rogue wave. And so I always have protection against it. I have puts and I have different hedges that pay off at different levels. And, if we get this, squeeze higher, we will make money. I won't make as much money as the people that are levered long. But when that rogue wave eventually comes and those people that are levered long get wiped out, I won't get wiped out. So it just kind of depends on what your goals are and what your style is and what you like to do. And, different people have different goals, have different risk tolerances. But, you know, for me and my clients, you know, our strategy tends to work out pretty well.
I like that you use the rogue wave analogy. We did have the Eddie Aikau Big Wave Invitational.
Yeah.
Which is, for those people who don't know, Hawaii, obviously home of surfing, known for Big Surf during the winter. Waimea Bay on the shore, north shore of Oahu is one of the big wave spots. There's a lot of history and cultural aspects to this competition. They don't run it every year. Conditions have to be right. There's a certain holding period. The last time they ran it was 7 years ago, and they had an absolute epic swell. Crushed the shore. There were some 40-foot waves, and so they did run the eddy, and it was quite a spectacle. You watched some of that online?
Yeah, I did. You know, you sent me the text, and I immediately went to my computer and pulled it up, and I probably watched an hour of it. I you know, I'm not a surfer at all, but, and I've told you this before, but I've been to the North Shore two or three different times, and I could just go sit on Pipeline Beach or Sunset Beach and just sit there and watch the surfers for hours because I just think it's so cool. But it's madness. I mean, to go out in those waves, that is pure madness.
Yeah, even as a surfer in the surfer community there, that's the attitude we still have. It's like, yeah, we push our limits, but then, you know, these guys are pushing it on a whole nother level. When you go out and you have a heat for 45 minutes, you get your ass handed to you. You come in, and then you got to go back out if you win your heat three or four more times. So it was wild. And watching the live streams isn't necessarily the best experience, but, you know, go search YouTube or Instagram and just see some of these, like, you know, 30, 50 second clips of what these guys were paddling into. And it certainly is madness. So yeah, got to keep an eye out for those rogue waves, those big outside sets that can come in and kind of take you out. You know, as a hedge for some of this, people tend to think gold is the play. What are your thoughts on why people should or shouldn't be having, you know, taking positions in gold as part of the narrative of what the dollar and fiat currencies are doing, but also what's happening in the global economy?
Yeah, well, so I'm somebody who always owns gold. I have an allocation, physical allocation to gold. I think everybody should have it. My clients have it. And that's not something that we trade. And so if gold does well, we'll be okay. If gold doesn't do bad, it's not our whole portfolio. It won't kill us. But, and I don't really think about that part of my gold too much. You know, it's just there. But then, you know, I also will trade gold. Sometimes I will trade against that long-term long position. Sometimes I'll take shorts. Sometimes I'll buy calls or I'll buy puts. At the beginning of the year, you know, we shorted a bit of gold and we put a pretty tight stop on it. I think we shorted it like, you know, 1830 or 1850. It went to 1830 and we had a stop at 1860. It got stopped out at 1860 and, you know, we got stopped out. And, you know, since then, I kind of feel like we're going to test 2000 here sometime in the next couple of weeks. If you look at the positioning on gold, you look at the COT, so there's a commitment of traders, you can see, and it's not, the position is not yet extreme. I mean, the speculators, they're starting to get up there, and the commercial shorts are typically the other side of the trade. You know, they have a big net short position, but it's not extreme yet. But typically when you get to these extreme positions, then you get the reversal. So wouldn't shock me at all to see gold kind of test 19, well, we tested 1950, you know, yesterday. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see 2000 sometime in the next couple of weeks. But I do think that after we test that, if we don't go down from here, I think after we test 2000, I would expect a pullback. So again, it kind of depends on if you just have a long-term gold allocation or if you're a short-term trader, or maybe you're both. But I think it's important to always have, you know, it kind of goes with my overall thesis. I think you should always have some insurance. And to me, gold is insurance against the political idiocy and the central bank idiocy of the world, because, you know, When the whole ship falls apart, gold will put itself forward as a worthy replacement. So, yeah, but that's where I'm at with gold.
Yeah, I think the idea of gold being in an insurance policy against just exactly what you just described ends up morphing into this religion. We've talked about this, how people were very empathetic to, like, the frustration and the anger and the various aspects of the financial system that are broken, and gold, Bitcoin, they provide this potential relief valve, not in terms of fixing the problem, but just where people's emotions can go, where they feel like it's that, you know, life raft. And and you really look at how gold's performed over the last, you know, decade or so since the financial crisis, and it's been very, very painful if you treated it like a religion instead of an insurance policy.
Well, especially if you're in the miners. You know, the miners are still below where they were 10 years ago. Gold is now, well, I mean, gold made its big move in 2011, then it pulled back pretty hard, and now it's back kind of up to those levels again. But the miners have just gone sideways forever. And then, you know, to me, miners are something you have to rent and not own them forever. You know, and we've had a really big move in the miners over the last 6 months. I think the miners are up anywhere from 30 to 50%, depending on which ones you're looking at. So, you know, if you're in the mining space and you've made some money over the last 6 months, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I would at least have one eye on the exit here.
Take some profits. There's nothing wrong with checking off a win. So talked about the COT and when you start to see these extreme positionings, well, you're certainly seeing some extreme positionings in the dollar market. Do you want to talk about some of that?
Sure.
Of course you
do. Sure. Right before I move on, let me just go back to gold for a second, because back in at the end of September, we had extreme positioning. The commercial shorts were very low. They weren't their lowest ever, but they were very, very low. The speculators on the long side were very low, and the price was very low, and the sentiment in gold was very low. And so that was a time where if you were going to make a trade, if you didn't already own gold and you just or if you just wanted to do a trade, that was a period where sentiment was low, positioning was extreme, and you know, technically we were kind of at a support level. So it made sense that gold had a run. The reason I bring that up is because that is at the same time that the dollar was peaking. Okay. And so at the end of September, gold was low, dollar was high, vol was at its highest level or pretty close to its highest level over the last 2 years. There's been several times since 2020 where volatility, the VIX index, for lack of a better word, you know, ticked up between 35 and 40. And every time since then, either the market on its own or the powers that be have been able to get things under control and get vol back down. And at the end of September, the dollar was kind of running up pretty high. It was around 114. In that last week, we had the Bank of Japan intervene in the yen and the JGB market. We had the Bank of England interfere in the gilt market over there because it was on the state of collapse. And we had the ECB that had finally raised rates, but was at the same time buying periphery bonds to keep the interest rates low. And we had VIX at 40. And if VIX, and at the same time, equities were at their lows of the year. And the point I'd like to make is that is the level where it's either going to get better or you're going to have a crisis. Because that is where things start to really break. Things were getting pretty shaky there, but that's when the wheels literally start to come off. And so when we go, and I sent out a tweet, it was literally the day of the dollar high. And it basically said, now that everybody's bullish the dollar, and everybody who said the dollar would never go higher is telling you why it can't stop going higher, it's probably going to pull back. Now, I have hedges that would pay off if volatility kept going and the governments didn't get under control. And even just a few more days, and those hedges would have paid off in a massive way. The reason I sent that tweet out was because I knew this was the point. This is the point where either they're going to come in and squash it, or things are going to get real, really quick. But that's also why I don't go all in on these trades, right? Because again, things tend to work out, right? Markets, again, tend to go higher. Governments tend to figure out a way to get things under control. Central banks are very powerful. They tend to respond to the crisis in a way that kicks the can down the road. So I don't go all in on these trades either. I think you need to be prepared for them, but you don't go all in on them. So now let's bring this back to the dollar. The reason I sent that out is because at the time, if you remember, inflation was very high. Fed was raising rates aggressively. But it was also at that time where I felt like inflation was going to start to peak. The rate expectations, the expectations of further hikes would probably start to pull back. the governments were intervening in the markets, and it just kind of made sense that that would be a time where the dollar would pull back. And when it, at the time, the DXY was around 114, I think, and the 200-day moving average was around 105 or 106. And I thought that's probably about the place we would pull back to. And it did. It pulled back to there, you know, into November. Or it actually kind of traded sideways for a while. And then in November, it pulled all the way back to that level. And it actually went through there. And I thought it would kind of hang out around that area for a month or so and then start its move back. But it hasn't. I mean, it's the dollar has continued to come down. And right now, the dollar is around 102. And that's the, that's, it's basically right now at the same level of the peak of 2020 during the COVID crisis. So if you remember in the COVID crisis, the dollar made a big run. It ran to like 102, pulled back, and then is now it's made a big run higher. And now a subsequent pullback. So now we've pulled back to that level of where it was at 2022. Sentiment on the dollar, it's not extreme on the low side, but it's getting very close. Sentiment on gold and equities, it's not extreme. Gold is not extreme, but it's getting close. Equities is kind of mid-range. But volatility is at 18 or 19 today, which is not the lowest of the last 2 years, but it's close to the lowest. So we basically have the almost have the polar opposite today of what we had in September. It's not quite there yet, but it's getting pretty close. I thought this would be a good opportunity just to talk about the dollar and why I think it's so important to focus on it. Because if you get the dollar wrong, you're probably going to get a lot of other things wrong because the dollar is so important to the overall global economy. But it's also why I've never told anybody to go all in on, you know, the dollar going higher. Again, the milkshake thesis does not say just sell everything and sit in cash. That's not the idea. The idea is to be aware of it because it's so important, right? And so I think, you know, all the people 2 years ago who didn't think it could ever go higher, and then it did, and now it's come back to the level of where it was at 20, you know, in 2020. And I feel like when I talk to people, like they've already forgotten last year. It's like now the dollar's headed lower. It can't possibly go higher. You know, the Fed can't hike rates anymore. They're going to print. The Fed's going to come out and start printing, and the dollar's going to go to 80. You know what? That could happen. But if that happens, it just that is kicking the can down the road. That does not solve the problem. So it's possible. You know, we talked about how could this? How could we have the Goldilocks scenario for another 6 months or a year? That could absolutely happen. I can't say that that's an impossibility. But all that does is kick the can down the road, and it doesn't solve the problem. And we will end up right where we were back in September at some point in the future. So again, for those that are wondering what's going on with the dollar, you know, that's it. The rate expectations are coming down. Also, the debt ceiling. We haven't really talked about the debt ceiling yet, John. Typically, when we've bumped up against the debt ceiling in the past, and the Treasury can no longer issue bonds as a result, you get into a situation where the Treasury is sending the cash that they already have in the bank out into the economy. So they're sending money into the economy. That provides liquidity. Typically, at the same time they're sending that money out, they're selling Treasury securities and sucking some of that money back in, right? And so, a lot of times it has a counterbalance effect. And sometimes they may even be issuing more bonds than the money they're spending out. So they're actually draining liquidity. But when you bump up against the debt ceiling, and you're just sending the money out and not draining any, that has typically been a time of dollar weakness. So I can't rule out the fact that the dollar could be lower. But at some point, they are going to raise this debt ceiling. It will absolutely happen. And they're going to start draining that liquidity again, and we'll end up right back where we were. Anyway, I just thought that was kind of an important time, you know, with the dollar where it's at. It's at its lowest level since June. My thesis hasn't changed because my thesis has always been be invested, be ready, you know, be a long-term investor, but be ready for the rogue wave. And I'm convinced we're going to get another dollar rogue wave at some point. But between now and then, I'll just keep surfing.
Oh, look at you.
How you doing? Is that good? You like that?
Look at this guy dropping the surf lingo. The man who's I'm not even. To go I'm, in the I don't water.
Even. I don't even serve. You know, one of the worst days of my life. One of the worst days of my life was the day after I tried to surf in Honolulu, because my neck was so sore from just paddling out on the board with my.
God, I wish I could watch that. So, look, to summarize some of that, I think the first thing I'll say is the debt ceiling is still very early in terms of what the impact is going to have. Once we really hit the debt ceiling and there's really this, like, they start shutting these little things down and then there's certain funding crises, I think it's good that you addressed it because we can watch some of these potential knock-on effects if they're unfolding. But we'll definitely open that up much deeper and get into it further when we have something that we can say, hey, look, this is directly correlated to the debt ceiling, but most likely they're going to kick the can down the road. And I feel like a lot of this conversation has been about, plan for long term. Look at generally, you have economic growth, society moves on, central banks, governments, people, we find a way to innovate. From the standpoint of central planners, they find a way to kick the can down the curb. But when you have things like what happened in various markets the last 7 months, these shocks, these surprises, whether it's the JGB or other, the other issues we've had in with the pound and the gilt markets and et cetera, you don't put insurance on when the house is already on fire. And right. you have these environments where the rubber band gets really, really stretched. And then if you ever stretch rubber band and let it go, it recoils back to a place and then you've got to stretch it again. So the markets keep going through these very chaotic stretch periods. And I don't want to use rubber band or a pendulum because it's not this very casual swinging effect. It is this very if you go shoot a rubber band, it's all over the place, but then it coils back up into a little pile for you to stretch it out again. So it feels like these economic crises or these shocks, they're happening so quick that if you aren't positioned for it, if you at least haven't even thought about some of how these things can play out, by the time you're saying okay, is this the moment things are going to break, is the central bank going to get in, well, you've already missed the opportunity. Really, you're just waiting to see what happens in the 2-minute drill in the fourth quarter. If you haven't placed your bets or put your insurance on at that point, it doesn't matter, you might as well just strap in. And in addition to that, if you've missed kind of that downside of things, you weren't preparing for the unknown black swan chaotic event, we tend to, it feels like, be more and more getting into this V-shaped recovery financial system or global economy because of the quick response. Central banks realize they have the power to literally do whatever it takes, quote unquote, right? And they're doing that faster and faster. They're not waiting for things to get out of hand. Reputationally, they kind of feel like we all expect them to do it. So why wait and pretend like they're not going to do it? You may, and I say this because of all the things that we're talking about, what's going on in the market. Nobody has a crystal ball, but people get really, really emotional about the role that the dollar plays, the role that gold's going to play. Yeah. And by the time your narrative actually has room to seed itself and actually make sense, the story has already changed. Because the response mechanisms are so quick right now. So yeah, if you're positioned for certain things to happen and they happen and you don't, make your five bagger, chances are you're about to lose what profits are there.
Yeah. And I think the best way for me to sum it up is I always get questions about the milkshake theory. Of course, it kind of comes with the territory. I think the best way for me to sum it up is the milkshake theory is not convincing everybody to bet 100% that I'm right. The whole point of pounding the table on the milkshake theory is to get people not to bet 100% that I'm wrong, right? Don't go 100% in that the dollar's days are numbered and it's going to fall. Because as you saw last year, that might not happen.
Perfect. Well, we'll let you surf on out of here with that mic drop. We went a little long today, but it was good. There was a lot to cover. It feels like there's the lava starting to boil, and we're gonna see what village or town gets wiped out from the volcano erupting. Something's going to burst here soon. So we'll find out what that is. Maybe next week. Maybe it'll happen in the next couple of days. But Brent, always a pleasure, man. Thanks so much, and I look forward to chatting with you next week.
All right, guys. See everybody later.
See you guys. Oh, I should mention really fast, milkshakepod.com. Milkshakepod is our Twitter handle, YouTube handle. At this point, hopefully you guys know that. But we're easy to find. We appreciate the feedback. Send the DMs, send the comments, and we look forward to seeing you all next week. Thanks so much, guys. Bye.